Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hello and welcome to Hurt Less, Live More, a show where we acknowledge the hurts that we experience in life and find ways to move on from those hurts to live life to the full. I'm JJ Stenhouse, the practical alchemist, and I'm here as ever with psychiatrist and coach Dr. Mark Goulston, plus our guest today, Elise Hu, a journalist, author and broadcaster in the USA. Welcome, Elise, and
thank
Mark.
You. Thank you.
You're welcome. Lovely to have you on the show. Mark, maybe you could say a little bit more about Elise by way of introduction.
Well, it's great to see her again. She was on my podcast, My Wake Up Call. She was spectacular. And a little about her background. She's the host of the TED Talks Daily program. It's the flagship podcast from TED that's downloaded a million times a day around the world. She's the former host at large at National Public Radio. She grew up being insatiably curious, but also being otherized. I mean, it's like to find out more about that, because if you're curious and you're otherized, seems like you could get yourself into trouble. She was the only Asian in her community, which was not a positive connotation. She has a new book out called Flawless: Lessons in Looks and Culture from the K Beauty Capital, because so many people in the Asian community are obsessed with their appearance, and it doesn't help their mental health much. I think they race away from hurt towards that, and they become even hurt more, comparing themselves to ideals that they will never match. So welcome, Elise.
Thank you. And just to be inclusive, I don't think it is limited. The notion that our appearance is really wrapped up with our worth and value is anything that's limited to any particular community. I think it's something that's true for all of us who have to kind of live in this very visual world.
I think you're absolutely right. Of course, it's not limited. But you have got experience of that particular community. So what we'd love to know from you, Elise, is what sparked the interest in this? I mean, okay, you grew up, you were the only, you're Korean is your background, is that right?
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm Taiwanese American.
You're Taiwanese, great. So you grew up though as an Asian person, for the only Asian person in your class at school, let's say, in your community. So what actually drove you to go, did you go to Korea and explore what's going on there culturally? What was behind that?
Yeah, so maybe a little bit by way of background. The reason why this book is about South Korea is because I was the founding bureau chief for NPR in Seoul. So okay. I
and opened that's National, the Seoul National bureau. Public Radio, isn't it?
That's right. So in 2015, I moved my dog, my cats, my toddler, my husband, and myself all to the other side of the Pacific from where we were living, Washington, D.C., to Seoul, South Korea, to open the first ever bureau for NPR covering North Korea, South Korea, and Japan.
Wow.
And so Flawless is a book that is bookended by my time, my arrival, and then my departure about 4 years later from South Korea. And it was a real wake-up call for me in a lot of ways, because I thought that I had dealt with a lot of my sort of bodily shame or feeling not confident or anxious or inadequate about the way I looked much, much younger in my life following my years as a teen model. But South Korea, in being a place that really is the dynamic epicenter of global beauty, triggered a lot of the questions that I think I left unresolved when I was in my youth. So I grew up in St. Louis and then in Dallas. My mother is Taiwanese. My father is Chinese. He's a Chinese defector. And I'm second generation. And while I'm really proud of my Asian culture, it wasn't exactly cool, you know, to be Asian growing up in St. Louis, just because there wasn't really anybody else like me. So I grew up, as Mark described, in this situation of feeling like my place had to be earned while everybody else's was assumed. And that doesn't tie that directly into my time as a journalist, except that it helped in my journalism, right? To kind of have one foot in each hole and understand that we needed to bridge cultures. And ultimately, I think that my job as a storyteller, especially one from foreign postings, is to do my best to illuminate the ways that we are similar, even though on the surface, it seems like, oh gosh, you know, Korea is really, really far away, or Japan is really, really far away.
And seemingly very other as well, although there are huge similarities often.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we are, as Maya Angelou said, we are all more alike than we are unalike. Yeah. And when it comes to Korean culture, Korea in particular, is, especially modern Korea, is carved, so much of the society is shaped by colonialism and war, right? The first part of the 20th century, Korea was brutally occupied by Japan, the scars of which continue today. And there's a lot of ongoing diplomatic tensions as a result between Korea and Japan. And then the back half, there was the World War II, which subsequently broke up the country into North and South. And then U.S. troops going in to defend South Korea in the battle against North Korea in the Korean War. And so cosmetic surgery itself, so the industry that is so celebrated today, South Korea now has more plastic surgeons per capita than any other place on the planet. No other country comes even close. The runner-up, Brazil, South Korea has 150% more plastic surgeons than even the second most, the country with the second most cosmetic surgeons. But cosmetic surgery itself comes out of war. So much of the techniques were developed to help with disfigurements after World War II and the Korean War. And so that's something that I trace in the book as well.
Yeah, the first cosmetic surgery was done here in the UK, I think.
Mm.
Yeah. That's right, after war, to help war veterans recover from their terrible injuries in that conflict. Yeah. Mm. So what is it about the, just getting back to what we're talking about here, the hurt, what is it that's driving this need for cosmetic surgery and to be flawless, to become flawless? What is it?
We have come as a society to, there are a few different things. One idea is that we have come to conflate beauty with morality. To be beautiful is to be good. We are all aware of a beauty premium that psychologists and a lot of sociology research has found, right? Attractive people tend to get so many more sort of benefits in society. There's this sense that those that are attractive are automatically smarter and more competent and more likely to be hired. So as a result of these assumptions, they are also more likely to be hired. They're more likely to find a mate, et cetera, et cetera. And so this conflation of appearance with identity, this conflation of appearance with morality is one reason. The other is, you know, we live in these very capitalistic neoliberal times, this idea of sort of pulling yourself up by the bootstraps. And what consumerism and these ideas about sort of being in the market do is that it makes it sort of possible to improve ourselves or buy things in order to improve ourselves. And so the idea of hard work happens on your body. So to be hardworking isn't like hardworking at a job necessarily, but it's also being hardworking on fixing yourself and improving yourself. And then that gets complicated because it gets thrown into these ideas of empowerment and wellness, even though you're spending a lot, right, to be empowered. So And then the other crucial point is that we are now at a point in technological and biological medical advances such that the body is malleable, that we actually can change things. You can go into the bone and the tissue and, or just simply in a non-invasive way, inject your muscles such that you don't have so many creases on your forehead. So there's a real cocktail of dynamics happening, but a key one is that we equate beauty with goodness. Another is that the body is becoming increasingly malleable. And then finally, we are products for consumption and also being consumed.
Yes, it's quite toxic in the end, isn't it, Mark?
Well, I'm trying to see is, look, I'm a shrink, so you have to take everything I say with a grain of Prozac. Adderall. Take Adderall. But I'm looking at, is there anxiety a component of it, or is it just, you know, wanting more sooner? I just want more sooner because less later is terrible. Is there a component of anxiety if you're not flawless? And can you unpack the drive?
Anotherism. Yeah. So just as there is sexism and xenophobia and fatphobia is one strain, right, of what I describe and what Koreans call lookism. It's appearance-based discrimination. And so when it is explicit that if you look this way, you're in, and if you don't look this way, you don't fit the norms, if you don't meet the standards, you're out, and you are less likely to get a job or less likely to find a mate or less likely to make friends, then it is completely logical and rational to want to drastically change yourself in some cases, or lose a lot of weight, or fix your nose, or get rid of any blemishes on your skin such that you can fit in. I mean, it is such a human drive to belong, right? It is so human for us to want to be loved and to feel like we are part of something and to feel connected to one another. What I don't like is the notion that if you meet a certain narrow standard, then you can belong. And if you don't, then you're out, right? It creates a lot of marginalization for those who don't fit in, but it creates anxiety and it creates exhaustion for all of us because everybody is on this treadmill of trying to maintain a certain appearance or have your body meet the standards required by culture in order to feel accepted. And that causes a lot of anxiety, of course.
This is me speaking from my age, so you got to take that with a grain of salt also. Do you think that this race to be more beautiful, more flawless, distracts people from intimacy? I mean, you know, when you're on this hamster wheel aimed towards looking a certain way, you know, being emotionally close to people, you know, it requires kind of letting go of what's driving you to find out where the people you supposedly care about, where they're coming from.
If our connection to other people is only as strong as our connection with ourselves, then trying to chase a false ideal or worrying about what others will think or trying to sort of change our appearance in order to meet some external standards or external approval is keeping us from being connected with ourselves, right? And if we are disconnected from ourselves, I think it's certainly an obstacle to being more strongly connected to others.
Yeah, can I just, something that's just popped into my mind there as you were talking, and it's somebody I met in your neck of the woods, Mark, in Los Angeles some years ago. And this was a woman who'd obviously gone to great pains to be absolutely immaculate about the way she looks, from her makeup, the way her hair was done, to her clothes. I mean, when she walked into the room, I didn't think she was real. She just looked like a doll. And I couldn't connect with this person at all. There was just nothing there that I felt any connection with. And so, you know, it comes back to what you were talking about, you know, your connection with self. If you don't have that connection with yourself, if you're projecting something which isn't true to you, then there is this disconnect. It has to be.
I also think that the concept of the self is so much more nuanced than just what we look like on the outside.
Yeah.
And I think it gets overly simplified and overly reduced to just what we look like on the outside. Mm-hmm. It gets overly reduced to other things too, right? Like we overly identify with our jobs. In Washington, D.C., where I used to live, it was constantly like, what do you do? What do you do? Because we make quick judgments based on people's jobs. But I think it's even worse for the way we make quick judgments on the way people look, you know? And so that is one issue, right? Like what is left of yourself if your entire self-concept is just what's on the outside?
Right.
So I could understand why it might be difficult to connect with somebody like that. The other component that comes up in my reporting is that time and labor and energy goes into trying to maintain that flawless exterior, such that if you are spending all your time and energy and work that way and money that way, then what is left? You know, like how we spend our days is how we spend our lives. And if you're spending hours and hours a day, like booking appointments, researching your next procedure, buying products, putting on products, then it does seem like you are kind of an empty shell of a person, right? Because the way that you spent your time was really exclusively on your exteriors. And we are so much more than that. And I do think that our time is so important to consider when it comes to grooming, because having more time is such an important lever and source of freedom and ability to make choices with how we spend our days and lives.
Yeah, so true. And I'm like Mark, I've got to a certain age where it doesn't really, you know, I just am what I am. I'm sorry. What you see is what you get. And I don't really pay. Obviously, I want to look good. I want to look, you know, pleasant. I don't want people turn away in disgust.
Right.
But I'm not going to go out of my way to have any procedures done. And certainly at my age, you know, what is the point, really?
Did you ever ask yourself? Sorry, being a journalist. So I. Was there a transition point where you kind of made that decision explicitly, or what was the conversation with yourself like about, oh, wow, I could, you know, I see myself getting older. I could just embrace my evolution, or I could try and turn back time.
I have never, ever wanted to turn back time in that way. I have never felt the urge to go down the road of having some kind of procedure done that will make me look younger.
Yeah.
I've always espoused a very natural way of living, a very natural way of being. And no, I've never felt the need to do that. I think it served me reasonably well. You know, I feel quite healthy. I don't have any particular issues. Maybe I put on a little bit of weight, but, you know, as I say, in one's dotage, one tends to put on a bit more weight, but it comes and goes sometimes as well. So I just, yeah. You know, I'm good with that. But we'll talk more about this in a moment. But right now we've got to take a break. So we'll be back right after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98, because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station, with me, JJ, Dr. Mark Goulston, and our guest today, Elise Hu. And Mark, I think you wanted to jump in with something about age and looks.
As I was listening to both of you, I remembered some years ago, I saw two women in their late 80s, and the contrast was amazing. The first lady came in, and she was clearly, she had a big streak of vanity. Her hands were swollen from arthritis, and she was just bemoaning that she had to resize her rings, you know, because of the knuckles and all that. And look, you're a therapist, you're non-judgmental, at least externally. although there's that a recent show, Shrinking, where Jason Segel tells you what's really on our mind in that show. But, you know, and I'm being compassionate and understanding. And but her vanity was just, I wouldn't say astonishing, but a lot. And then a few hours later, a woman the same age comes walking in, and she's bent over with crippling arthritis. She kind of looks like the witch in Snow White, if you can picture that. And she has a huge smile on her face. And the contrast was amazing. And I had to ask her, I said, you're all bent over and, you know, you're kind of twisted up with that cane and you're smiling. What's going on? Mm-hmm. She said to me, I was just thinking how great that cane's going to look in 5 years when I'm in a wheelchair. That's what I call perspective. So I just want to, I want to share that. Maybe we can throw that word in, and I would love you to comment on that. The word perspective, you know, because it seems like if you're racing, chasing something and never quite being there, or you always have to do more, I would imagine that those people don't really sort of have a perspective on what should matter. I mean, what's mattering to them is something that they can't quite achieve, or to sustain it, they're going to drive themselves crazy.
I also spent some time, I wrote an entire chapter on elderly Korean women, because there is this meme about Asian women aging, in which it's six comic panels, and the first panel, she's in her 20s, and she's, you know, meets all of the thinness, youth, firmness, smoothness standards of beauty, right? So she's 20. And the next panel, she's 30, and she looks exactly the same, but wears a different color shirt. And then maybe she's pregnant or something like that. And then 40 also looks exactly the same, but she's cut her hair shorter. And then I think around 50, it's like menopause. And then that's just one of the panels. And then 60 or 70 at one of those panels, she looks like she's in a tracksuit. She's in a perm. She has a sunglasses on. She looks like former North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il. You know, so suddenly the joke is that Asian women don't age until suddenly they're a caricature, you know, with the visor and the sweatsuit. And so I deliberately spent time with women in their 70s and up in South Korea to see how they thought about beauty and their evolution. And it's really actually affirming, and the vision of where the ajumma is the colloquial term for an older Korean lady, where the ajummas wind up, in which they care for their bodies, but they care for their bodies as they are rather than how they wish their bodies to be, is something that somebody like me, who's 41, should also aspire to. So it's not that the project of really sort of nourishing yourself and caring for your body ends. It's that the motivations come from an inside out motivation rather than outside in. So what they do to care for their bodies is really a lot more about just kind of respect for community, for one another. It's like one of them said to me, I always want to just have a nice and clean look. I don't want to be completely unkempt or unshowered. I want to at least groom, because I am in a community. I go to line dancing classes with my friends. You know, we get together for coffee. And so there is some care for the body that is communal, that I think is actually connective and helps grease social connection, which is strong. And then the other is that one of them gets facials every month, and she says she feels blessed after she gets them, right? Because there is something that's really nurturing about the touch of beauty workers and the sense that, especially when you're older, women are outliving men. And so a lot of times the touch of a beauty worker might be the only time that an older woman is touched in the course of her day. And so it's really lovely to be able to kind of treat yourself that way and not as a privilege if you can afford it. It's something that's really part of a ritual, you know? And I think that there's something really lovely about that. So I learned a lot about them, and they are able to have a positive attitude about appearance and a feeling of control over their bodies as they age. And that actually, I would assume, would lead to health and longevity and a full life for longer in those older years on the back halves of our lives. And so that I thought was really something to take note of. And if you do get the book, there's a whole chapter on the wisdom of the Ajumas, which I think is near the conclusion.
I think I'll have to get the book. I certainly relate to what you're talking about there. And it is true that for a lot of people, older people, that is the only kind of touch that they might get. I remember looking after my own mother when she was in her last years. And you know, if she didn't get a hug from me, that was probably, you know, nobody else would touch her. Do you know what I mean?
That's so poignant.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really important. Yeah. What do you think, Mark?
No, I'm going to get the book as well, because I may read that last chapter first and then go from the beginning. I'm also reminded of a patient years ago who didn't have any family. She was all alone, and she came in, and I guess she wasn't a chatty particular person. And I used to see her every other week, and she said, "You know, when I see you, it's the only time in my life when I hear my voice."
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it goes to that, you know, real hunger for connection. And, you know, I was just in my car listening to the Surgeon General talking about loneliness.
Loneliness, yes.
And how rampant it is in America. And he admitted to it. How does this fit? Because you mentioned something, a sense of community, wanting to belong to a community, and where does loneliness fit into this, or is just it's not related?
I think it's completely related. I think that if we are caught in an endless competition with one another, then it distracts and it obscures the fact that we are actually in a web with one another. So if we are and connected, right? And sort of mutually dependent or interdependent. In fact, by the end of the book, I need to actually find the text for you, but by the end of the book, I write about how what I want to see. And so just a second.
Yeah, I wanted you to immerse us in that, because the message that you're also trying to convey, in addition to reporting on the phenomena.
Yeah. So I say something about how I would love it if the connection and the comfort through the ritual of care, which is sometimes centered and takes place at spas and salons, I would love it if that connection and comfort remained, but a stubborn adherence to these sort of beauty industry-led, factory-issued, algorithm-juiced beauty standards did not remain. Mm. And so I would love it if the way that we treated one another was really centered around connection and mutuality. And I think that's kind of the baseline cultural change that could address the collective burnout that so many of us feel. And burnout is tied to work when it comes to going to the office, but it's also tied to work on our bodies and having to chase standards. All of these things are related. And if you ask me what my dream is, it's not for everyone to believe they're beautiful, because beauty is fleeting. It's something that I think does not need to equate goodness. I think all bodies are good bodies. So if you ask me what my dream is, it's that instead of believing that we're beautiful, that we believe that we're worthy, flaws included. You know, I would love some sort of non-punitive meritocracy that rewarded people for kindness and the kind of self-care that's caring for one another, right? That recognizes the collective and a real responsibility to one another.
And I think we are all beautiful, though. I think that, you know, in the real sense of the word.
Yes, not physical beauty, right?
Exactly.
Like I think there's so much beauty in the world when it comes to nature and art, and there's a spiritual beauty. And that's the kind of beauty I think that we get away from when beauty gets so wrapped up in just appearance.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting, Elise, when you just described that and what your wish for the world was, the tempo of your voice and the tone of it shifted.
Yeah.
And it became more beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, really,
and I'm not saying the tone, you know, the enthusiasm, your energy, all that, but I could feel that emotion, like almost like a wishfulness of like, it was like, if only.
Yeah. And it's not fatalism, right? It's hope, because we all have an opportunity to rethink how we value ourselves and reexamine how we measure each other, right? So we have an opportunity to change. Nothing is inevitable. And I think that the pandemic showed us that for sure. If we've learned anything from the past few years, it's that a lot of the things that we believe are impossible are completely possible. It just takes it happening, right? So of course I remain hopeful and wishful for a more mutual kind of connectiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Share some other things. When we interview people who have books, and when I interview them on my other show, what I, in order to not algorithmically juice the interest in your book, but just juice the interest in your book, can you share a few things to whet our appetite where people would say, I never would have thought of it that way.
So one thing I write about is, you know, we're all used to the male gaze, the notion that women have to perform for the gaze of men.
Oh, yeah.
Something that I think is happening today because of the algorithms and so much visuality in social media is the emergence of what I call the technological gaze, that instead of women learning how to perform for the gaze of men, that all of us humans are learning how to perform for screens, whether that's the sort of automatic filters that come with Zoom that touch up our appearance, that you don't even have to opt in on, it just can come automatically, and or the automatic filters like TikTok will slightly improve your appearance by smoothing your skin and thinning out your jaw by 1-3% so that it's not really detectable to the human eye, but you are getting trained by technology. So this idea that we are performing for technology and we're feeding it with data, but then it's spitting back to us what these standards are and what people like to look at. And so then teaching us again what we're supposed to look like. That is a loop that I think is more modern and a result of this hyper-visual, hyper-digital society that we live in. And now you're introducing AI, which is another component, which then feeds on even more data and then can make us even more cyborgian, which will then narrow and narrow standards. So if you've been thinking a lot about technology or your prepubescent teen or your teen, you know, who's spending a lot of time on social media, I think that there's a lot of insight and analysis in the book that will kind of get your motors running. That's one way to talk about the book that we haven't touched on.
That's brilliant. A food for thought there, definitely. And it's whetting my appetite even more. We'll talk more after a break. We'll be back right after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ the Practical Alchemist, and Dr. Mark Gookston. Plus, our special guest today, Elise Hu. And Mark, I think you wanted to make a point about appearance.
Well, I made a dig. I made a dig. A lot of our audience is in the UK, and maybe I've just been watching too many old British movies. But you know, it seemed like there's an American bias, or maybe just the American baby boomer bias, that you know that vanity seems less important to the British than to other cultures, and I could be completely wrong, and so that's part of what I brought up. And then Elise said, and we asked Elise something else that she wanted to share, and she mentioned parenting, and JJ mentioned that our audience is largely women from 25 to 45 and 50, so many of them are parents. So we'd love to hear more from you on that subject.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big questions for me, especially after just writing and researching a 380-page book about this, is how I teach my daughters. I happen to have three elementary school-age daughters, and how I teach them not to overvalue appearance. Because already my 10-year-old is haranguing me about wanting to shave her legs. She's wanting a skincare routine. I can't believe she wants a skincare routine, considering what her mother writes about. But
wow.
But it's true. It just shows you that, you know, culture plays such a powerful influence in young people's lives. They really learn what to want and what to desire based on what their friends want and desire and what media shows them to desire. And so she spends very minimal time on social media, but her social media feeds, her TikTok For You page, is constantly showing, you know, influencers and young actors and what they look like. And then those are molds that then she wants to kind of imitate, right? And then a beautiful imitation then becomes another mold, and social media just powers that on steroids. So there was a moment that stopped me cold that I described in my book, in which my two daughters, at the time they were 6 and 9, and I just put them down in their bunk beds to sleep, and I was tiptoeing down the hallway, and I heard the younger one, the first grader, say to her third grader sister, she said, "Oh, mama says it doesn't matter if you're pretty. It matters if you're clever." And the older sister says to the younger one, she kind of rolls her eyes, I imagine, because she can be a little sarcastic. She's like, "Oh, she just says that because she's already pretty."
Oh, wow.
Indicating that she had already absorbed from being alive that society rewards if you fit in a certain sort of conventional, beautiful norm, you know? And this led me down more reporting, and I sort of thought, gosh, I don't want my kids to be over-obsessed with their appearance, and yet telling them that it doesn't matter, that it's their insides that count, that was a complicated form of gaslighting them. You know, I wasn't being completely truthful with my kids, because they can see with their own eyeballs, especially in the era of Instagram and TikTok. And so I really struggled to find a third way. And ultimately, this was another way that South Korean culture and Western culture are very similar. It's just expressed in different ways. So South Korea sort of acknowledges that looks matter and you should do what it takes to improve your looks. In the US, where I live, there is this papering over of the fact that looks matter, or we try to cloak it in the ideas that all bodies are beautiful, you know, body positivity, love your body at any size. But what it does is it sort of covers up all of the ways that we see the pretty privilege working for people, but then not acknowledging it out loud. So in both ways, it's problematic. And my third way that I ultimately landed on now is that I no longer sort of lie to my kids. I do say that you are going to run into people who think that fat is bad and thin is good, and these judgments that like that are completely based on, you know, false cultural notions rather than what is actually healthy. You know, we talked about how the British in the aggregate have healthier teeth, but then Americans like to say, oh yeah, the British with the bad teeth. And that's because we over-conflate appearance with health. We over-conflate appearance with worth. And so I reported this out and ultimately found that healthy self-acceptance for your kids really comes from modeling healthy acceptance of ourselves, that we can't teach what we haven't learned first, that we are going to have to look within and get curious and interrogate our own biases, our own ways of judging other people's looks. And this is very important, the ways that we judge our own looks. Like, do I linger too long in front of the mirror? Do I have a scale in my house? You know, what are there things that I'm doing that are then modeling to my kids that looks matter? And they will can be a determinant in whether I feel good and fulfilled in myself during the day, but also in my life. And if that's the case, if I have negative body talk, I have to stop it. And what are my beliefs and biases that could then be passed down to my kids in a way that they might feel like they have to chase some unreachable standards? And what does it mean for people who don't meet those standards? So continually we have to interrogate our sense of self and make it far more nuanced, but never, never break that link between us and other people, that the choices that we make individually that might benefit us may not be good for the collective. Do I think Botox might individually relieve anxieties in the short run for people who get it? Yes, sure. I mean, there's a lot of people who get it and say like, oh, I feel younger. I feel like I'm more included in meetings because I'm not like the old hag or whatever it at work because I can kind of fit in. So it could be individually good. But is it good for your community of other moms who will also then all feel the pressure to get it? Because, you know, it's you're normalizing, you're raising the standards and the stakes and then having everybody else have to normalize to that. So continually ask, you know, what healthy self-acceptance would look like for you. Interrogate your own biases. Find a way to break the link between appearance and worth. And celebrate the body for what it can do and what it can feel, sensuality of the body, instead of simply what it looks like.
Beautifully said. Yeah.
I just want to share something that I've learned about parenting because I'm focused on reducing teen mental health issues and reducing teen suicide. And something that's helpful because parents are looking for tactics. Give me a tactic. And one of the things we suggest in interrogating yourself or your teen is the three reallys. Whatever they say, say, I understand that, but what's really going on? And then you repeat back to them. And what you're hoping they'll get at, which is the whole purpose for the show, is I can't make the hurt go away. Well, what's the hurt about? So don't put lipstick on a pain, figuratively or literally, but when you say what's really going on, and even to question yourself, when you get triggered, well, what's really going on?
Yeah.
What am I really hurt about? What am I feeling afraid of? I'm going to share a very quick anecdote because I share anecdotes. When I was at UCLA training in psychiatry, it had one of the leading eating disorders programs in the country. And we would sometimes have to hospitalize and tube feed young people, mostly women. Sometimes they'd weigh 80 pounds and we'd tube feed them because they were going to die. And there was a woman who came in on a Saturday when I was on call, and it was clear that she was going to have to go up into the inpatient unit. And we'd been trained in a bunch of things besides medication, guided imagery, visualization, meditation, hypnosis. And I just had this feel about this young woman. She was probably around 19 or 20. And I said, can we try something before they come down to pick you up and take you up into the inpatient unit? And she said, sure. I said, if it triggers you, we can stop. And I said, are you right-handed or left-handed? She said, I'm right-handed. I said, close your eyes, put your legs up on the chair in front of you. I'm going to count to 10 slowly. Put your left hand over your stomach, and I want you to imagine that that's the mommy you want and need. We're not here to bash your parents, and that mommy is saying to you, I am here and I'm not going anywhere. And just breathe that in and just take it in. And her eyes got a little moist. And then I said, now take the right hand, put it on top of the left hand. And that's the daddy that you and mommy want, saying, I'm here too, and we're going to get through this. And then I had her weave between them, the mommy from the left hand, I'm here, I'm not going anywhere. And the right hand was the daddy saying to both of them, I'm here, and we're going to get through this. And she starts to, you know, tears are flowing down. And then they come to pick her up. And, you know, and I said, look, you can remember everything or nothing that we talked about, but you're not going to forget that feeling. And she looked at me, and as she's leaving, and I said, you're going to get through this. She looked at me and she says, is the cafeteria open? I'm starved. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that says so much about what's going on deep inside people who are racing. I mean, just think of bulimics or anorectics. They're obsessed with the way they look, what they're eating. They feel out of control in their life. And so they identify some areas. Oh, if I can control this, I'll be in control of my life. And it just gets worse.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful story.
Yeah. And add to that, you know, society so rewards you for being a certain weight too. So you're getting that sense of feel of love and belonging often if you are at a lower weight, even if it is unhealthy for you. So again, you know, beauty and health don't mean the same thing.
Yeah. And particularly on social media as well, as we were saying earlier, because you're getting the dopamine hits of all those likes and everybody following you. And it pushes people to do even more, I think. Yeah. And, you know, what you're saying about sets of scales, I don't think I've owned a set of scales for years. I never bother about weighing myself.
It's not necessary. Yeah.
No, absolutely not. Why do I need to know that? Right. I don't need to know that to live my life.
Right. And for the moms out there, I just think the big lesson that I learned was that liberation from bodily shame or angst or inadequacy and those feelings for my daughters really starts with me and starts with my own liberation from those feelings of angst and inadequacy and bodily shame. I mean, there are good days and there's bad days, but they know that I'm working on it and they know that this is something that we can talk about. And I think that's a really important starting point for young people.
Yeah, Elise, what triggers you to feel bodily shame and what have you discovered liberates you from it?
That's a really great question. Korea. Korea made me feel a lot of bodily shame just because I was so much larger. I am 5'9", so already I'm a taller woman, but I also wear a UK size 8 or a US size 8. I think that's a UK size 10. I think it's
8's a size 12.
Size 12. Okay. So I wear UK size 12, US size 8. That is plus size in South Korea.
Yeah.
And, I got a lot of reminders about that, even on the streets. You know, people in the shopkeepers would yell large size to me on the streets. So you're constantly reminded, and that certainly did trigger a lot of the feelings of sort of inadequacy and bodily shame that I felt when I was a young model in my teens. And how did I get over it? One was really since, I guess, growing up, you know, and addressing a lot of this, I have learned to really break that link between appearance and worth because I study it, right? So even reporting this book itself was healing for me just in seeing and reading and hearing so many stories. When I had an eating disorder in my youth in the early aughts, I felt really alone, like I was the only person going through this. Now that I'm 40, I found that everybody, all my friends, were all having the same eating disorder at the same time and all keeping it from one another. So one of the most important antidotes to shame is sunlight. Is openness, yeah. Is vulnerability. And so that's one way that I break my own cycles. I identify my patterns and I break them. The other is I dig into it. I talk with other people. I try and express my own sort of struggles and journey, not only with my children, but also here with you on the radio and also in a book that I've written. And so I hope that it gets out there so that other people can feel like they're less alone and also feel worthy in their bodies, flaws and all.
I love that, Elise. And if anybody wants to find out more about you, because we're coming close to the end of the show and I've really enjoyed chatting with you today, and I'm sure Mark has as well. If anybody wants to get in touch with you or wants to find out more about you, where do they go online?
Just go to my website, elisehu.com, E-L-I-S-E-H-U.com.
Fantastic. I love it. Mark, final words today. It's been a great conversation, hasn't it?
Oh, I've loved every moment of it. And, you know, in the last few minutes when you talked about your struggle, I can feel the audience totally connecting with you.
Yeah.
And I think the more that you can do that, and I mean, you have so many talents and you can report on the phenomena, you have a historical perspective, but I think maybe if you lead with that, because I think people are hungry to connect. And it was wonderful. That was the icing on the cake. So thank you.
Yeah, it really was. Thank you so much, Elise. And really sorry to say that that's the end of the show for today. If you're listening,
we're done already.
Yeah, we're done already. I'm sorry about this.
It flew by.
Well, you know, maybe another time we can go into this again. But do look out for Elise's book, and it's called Flawless, and it's out towards the end of May, isn't it? Towards the end of this month.
May 23rd, just 3 weeks away.
Oh, my birthday. Oh, fantastic.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
The book is going to come out on the same day. It's my book's birthday as well.
Yeah, see? Fantastic. Yeah. So thank you, Elise. Thank you from me and Mark. And thank you to everybody who's been listening. If you've been listening on your podcast platform and you like what you hear, do subscribe, share, leave a review if you can, all of those good things. And, you know, because you never know, if you share it with somebody, it might just be the thing that they need to hear. And until next time, hopefully you'll join us another time for more interviews and chats. But for now, it's goodbye from all of us. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat, and boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.